first of all, before we get to any of the other details, and there's so many to talk about, there's something that came to my attention that I wanted to call to your attention. And you probably know about this kind of thing because you know everything when it comes to voter fraud. But a friend of mine brought this to my attention. Now, let me, I don't, this is not one of those invisible friends like Harry Reid has. This is a real guy. I mean, off the air, I could give you his name and address. And
he's
and,
not a Harvey.
Right, exactly. It's not an imaginary best friend.
Rabbit, right.
This is a real guy who is an immigrant, legal immigrant to America, legal resident of the United States, but emphatically not a citizen yet. He's a homeowner. He's a taxpayer, not a citizen. And he's clearly not a citizen, and he doesn't plan to try to vote. However, he got in the mail the following from the state of Washington. And it says, you may be eligible to vote, but don't appear to be registered. Register online, by mail, or in person. Log into www.myvote.wa.gov to get started. And then it has the same message in about six languages, including, I think that's, well, one is Vietnamese, one is, there are a lot of languages there, some of which I don't even recognize. Okay. So just to follow this up, he went to the website, and the website said, State of Washington offers three ways to register to vote. Again, this is someone who's not a citizen, shouldn't be voting. And it says to register online, and it says you can register by mail, online, or in person. And it says to register online, you need a current Washington State driver's license. Now, of course, he has that driver's license, and in our state, everybody, including people who are here illegally, gets driver's licenses, and that's it. All you have to do is go there, give their driver's license number, and then they ask you two questions. They ask you, will you be at least 18 years old by the next election? And you mark yes. And then they ask, are you a citizen of the United States? And if he gave a dishonest answer and marked yes, which he emphatically will not do, he's registered to vote. Is this typical, John? Does this kind of thing happen across the country?
Well, for 20 years since the motor voter law was passed as the first legislation Bill Clinton ever signed into law, you can do that by postcard. And the online version you're describing is exactly what's been done with motor voter postcards for 20 years. It's an honor system. And look, I believe in trusting my fellow man and woman. I also believe in verifying, to quote Ronald Reagan. And we have no verification. You want to cheat? You want to vote? Let me tell you how easy it is. Iowa just picked up and sent to jail three non-citizens, two Canadians and a Mexican. They'd been voting for years in Iowa.
Okay, let's leave aside the estimated now it's about 10 million Americans who are here illegally. You have no legal right to be here. There are an additional, it's almost 10 million people, isn't it, who are here legally but are not citizens.
Right, they have green cards and other documents.
Right. Do you have any idea, does anyone have any idea how many of those people who are here legally but are not citizens and shouldn't be voting, how many of them actually do vote?
Well, we have a clue. In Colorado, the Secretary of State asked the Department of Homeland Security for their list of resident aliens. And Department of Homeland Security said no, even though they were under a legal obligation to share it with the states. So Scott Gessler, the Secretary of State, fought and fought with them. Finally, they gave up a few weeks ago, and this was all reported in the papers, and the list is being sent over. Well, in reading all this controversy, it apparently was enough to prompt 430 people to write into the Secretary of State's office in Colorado and say, you know, there seems to be some kind of error here. I shouldn't be registered to vote. I'm a non-citizen. Would you please take my name off the list?
Okay.
If 430 people will spontaneously do that, and they've been following politics enough to figure this, that there's this issue as a controversy, maybe some of them were voting, and maybe a whole bunch of other people were voting, and they haven't written in yet.
Okay, this is 430 people already identified in Colorado. That's just about the margin that made George W. Bush president in the state of Florida.
Well, let's take Florida. In Florida, one NBC station in Fort Myers looked at the jury records for one county. they found 100 people had said, I can't serve in a jury because I'm a non-citizen, but they were registered to vote, and many of them were voting. Well, I mean, this is one county. So Governor Scott said, let's look at the whole state, and the federal government sued him. They finally backed down, but look, I'm glad these people are here if they're here legally, but they shouldn't be voting, and even in a few votes can make a difference.
Well, again, I just give the example here of the state of Washington. Now, the state of Washington presumably sends out cards like this to everybody, legal and illegal, who gets driver's licenses. And again, our state, it is legal for people who are illegal here to get driver's licenses. And so in close elections, we just had a gubernatorial race, as you'll well remember, 2004, where it was clearly a stolen election. And our incumbent governor won by 320 votes, I believe it was.
129.
Oh, it was Norm Coleman who lost by 320 votes. And in that election, he lost because 1,000 felons voted, right?
Yes, and the judge in Washington State, as you remember, even though he didn't overturn the election, he did admit there were more illegal votes cast in the Washington State governor's race in 2004 than the margin of victory, except he just couldn't figure out for sure who they voted for.
Yeah, can't guess that. Okay, the Norm Coleman race in Minnesota, which gave President Obama his crucial 60th vote to get Obamacare passed. Talk about that one for a minute for people who say that voting fraud isn't a problem.
Well, it changed history. In Minnesota, we had an election decided by 312 votes between Norm Coleman and Al Franken.
The unspeakable
and
Al Franken.
Franken had led through Election Day and for weeks afterwards, but then they started...
No, Coleman had led. Coleman was ahead.
Coleman had led for 3 weeks after the election, and then they started applying different standards to the absentee ballots. Some Democratic counties were applying a looser standard as to count questionable absentee ballots. The Republican counties were applying a tougher standard based on the rule of law. So after 8 months of legal wrangling, Franken declared the winner by 312 votes, went served in the Senate. He cast the deciding 60th vote for Obamacare. Obamacare wouldn't have passed if it hadn't been for Al Franken's 60th vote. And we later found, long after that, through the watchdog efforts of a group called Minnesota Majority, that 1,100 felons illegally voted. Can't be certain how they voted, but when Fox News interviewed a bunch of them, 9 out of 10 said they voted for Al Franken. And we know that when people register by party in states, they register by party in states in about 30 states, about 75% of felons routinely register Democratic. So the likelihood is that Al Franken and Obamacare came about because of voter fraud.
It is.
And we have convicted 198 of those people to date. You only could pursue those who actually confessed, because if you couldn't prove intent, you couldn't basically prosecute them. That would have been too difficult. So 198 people have been convicted, 66 more in the pipeline, dozens more are being investigated. Michael, we could end up with more people convicted illegally of voting in the Al Franken election than Al Franken's victory margin.
Speaking with John Fund, he is the author of a book, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Our Vote at Risk. And before we get back to the discussion with John Fund, one of the questions that lots of people would have is, what can I do about it? I mean, it's sickening when you think about the changes in history, the outcome of elections that are thrown into the dumpster because of cheating and voting fraud. My friend Hugh Hewitt said it very well a while ago when he wrote a book called If It's Not Close, They Can't Cheat. So it's up to you to make this election not close. How? Join our Power of 10 campaign. Now, this is a Power of 10 campaign. It's sponsored by the American Future Fund. And the American Future Fund is getting people to sign up. You go to our website, you look for the Power of 10 banner, click on it, sign up, you pledge to vote, and even more importantly, you pledge that you are going to contact 10 friends, 10 acquaintances, 10 more people. You're going to get them to sign up to vote. One of the things that is shocking is when you hear about these terribly close elections is the millions upon millions of conservatives who don't bother to vote. Oh, my vote won't make a difference. Oh, it doesn't matter. It matters this time. I mean, it matters profoundly. You're going to feel the difference immediately, because if Barack Obama gets reelected, the chances are overwhelming we're going to go off a fiscal cliff. I spoke to Nate Silver, the statistician for the New York Times, and he said that the chances of us going off a fiscal cliff are very small if Romney actually wins the election, and very high, or higher at least, if Obama wins the election. That means it is worthwhile for you to sign up with the American Future Fund for the Power of 10 campaign. Go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and there are banners right there. Sign up, or you can go directly to make2012count.com, and they'll show you how to do it. And by the way, we are going to be honoring every week between now and the election a citizen of the week on this show. That's the individual who can sign up the most new voters. Yeah, so go to our banner for the Power of 10 campaign. John Fund, what about the idea that early voting might make even efforts like the one I just described irrelevant?
Well, it's a challenge because we have changed how we conduct our elections in this country without anyone really having a debate about it. When Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, 5% of people voted early or absentee, either at a government center before the election or through the mail. Now it's going to be over 40% this year. Washington and Oregon, as you know, have basically abolished the polling place. You only vote by mail. This fundamentally changes our campaigns. I mean, 15% of America was eligible to vote before the debate on Wednesday. 85% would be eligible to vote before the last debate on October 23rd. Michael, let's say you or someone in your audience was having a lawsuit. You were suing someone for some money, and it was important to you, and it went to a jury trial. And what if during your lawyer summation, three or four people stood up and said, you know, I've heard enough. I think I'll vote now. How would you feel?
Yeah, but you make the point. I think it's a profound point. Sometimes this literally disfranchises people because when you have early voting, sometimes you have candidates die. That happened with Mel Carnahan when he was running for the Senate. He died in a plane crash. The late Paul Wellstone, Senator Wellstone, died in a plane crash. Now, there were people who had voted for him before he died. And your vote then it gets thrown away on Election Day because you can't elect a dead guy, at least.
Absolutely. And let's say there's a last-minute scandal or something happens or there's major developments. I mean, think about this. I mean, what if the economic crisis in 2008 had occurred in late October rather than mid-September? I mean, if we had had the kind of early and absentee voting that we're going to have now, then, gosh, maybe Barack Obama wouldn't have been president. But the point is not who it benefits, but that we shouldn't allow so many people to vote so early when the Constitution and our laws, Michael, say we have election day, we don't have election month.
That's such common sense. Let me ask you this. Some of the common sense voter ID laws, like the one in Pennsylvania, have been largely thrown out by judges.
No, they've been delayed. All of them have been upheld as constitutional. They've just been delayed for implementation this year. Mississippi, Pennsylvania, several others.
Okay, well, that's, of course, that doesn't help us this year, but it could help us in the future. What are the chances, if we got state legislatures to eliminate this early voting, what are the chances that some idiot judge would say that's unconstitutional?
Well, I don't think you should eliminate early voting. I think you need to contain it. And I think that the judge would look at the law, if he was following the law, and say, it says election day. You can make provisions for people to vote, you know, outside of that window, but the exception should not be the rule.
Right now, I just read a story at the very end of last week about Ohio and some of the early voting in Ohio, where the suggestions are Republicans might be doing a little bit better than expected. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, but again, I think this is a philosophical issue. We should not decide it on the basis of which party is advantaged or not advantaged. We should decide it on the basis of whether it makes sense. Do we want lots of people voting before the campaign has even started, before the campaign is over? And there's, why do we have campaigns? Why do we have these debates? Why do we have commercials? Look, if you have early voting, here's what happens. Candidates with more money are advantaged because they can raise more money to focus attention on 40 days of voting rather than one. Incumbents have more advantages because they can raise more money. The consultants and the pollsters get more business. We have more ads because you're having ads targeting vote people over 40 days of voting. These are the things that people don't like about politics. All the things we don't like about our endless campaign are exacerbated by early voting. And by the way, it doesn't even increase voter turnout. Whether it's the Pew Research Center or whether it's the American University or whether it's the Bipartisan Policy Center, early voting doesn't increase turnout. It simply means people who voted, would have voted anyway vote at a time that's more convenient for them.
Is there a reliable and appropriate way to increase voter turnout?
Well, first of all, I think we should focus on having voter turnout increase among knowledgeable voters. I much prefer voter turnout with people who actually care about the process.
And they know who's running.
Yeah, and who knows something about the issue. Having said that, we can improve Election Day. We can have better electronic voting machines. Some of the ones there are not nearly as reliable as they should be. We can have longer polling hours in some states that limit it. We can have more polling workers. You know, the average poll worker is 70 years old in this country. I think we should give high school and college kids credit for showing up on Election Day, getting some training, and working the polls on Election Day.